The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome, listeners. I'm Walter Zakowicz, executive editor of WWD and host of the WWD Voices podcast. Today is the first of a very special series of podcasts for the Retail RX Hub, which is being presented by Getzler, Henrich & Associates. And today, our guest is Michael Appel, managing director and head of retail practice at the firm. Michael, welcome. How are you?
I'm great, Arthur. How are you? Nice to see you.
It's good to see you too. I think before we started, I was thinking about your career and, you know, the amazing things you've done. Can you just explain a little bit about how you ended up at Getzler?
Okay. So I started in the, you know, I'll make this a quick one, but I'll start from the beginning, which was, you know, I started my career as a merchant at Bloomingdale's. I spent 10 years there and I bought housewares and then ended up running the kids division. From there, I went to a regional retailer, precursor to Bed Bath & Beyond, called Fortune Aqua, where I was vice president of merchandising, and then was president of a company called Hofritz, and then ran a whole bunch of different specialty retailers. And my background really covers all categories of merchandise, from discount mass to luxury. So I have an unusual background in the fact that I'm sort of category and channel agnostic, and because I love it all. It's all retail and it's all exciting. So starting in the 90s, I started doing work with companies that were challenged, and did a lot of work with Goldman Sachs, where I was sort of a utility player for their retail investment banking area. And first went to New Zealand, where I ran two companies they had bought there. One was Garden Center chain, and the other was like the Crate and Barrel of New Zealand. And then one of them we had to put into administration. So that was my first experience with restructuring outside the United States. And then came back and was asked by the head of Goldman in Europe and Asia to help them diagnose and work with saving the North American business of Laura Ashley. And we were successful in doing that and raising $80 million to keep the company going. After that, they asked me to work with a company called Mackenzie Childs, which is a decorative home furnishings retailer that was undergoing some issues, you know, company founder, et cetera. And then I started doing a lot of work with bondholders, people that, you know, companies that own debt in companies, and advising them on a multitude of issues, but mostly there were companies that were having difficulty, or there were questions about whether they should invest, et cetera. So I worked with the funds that ended up buying Barney's, then worked with the bondholders of Casper and Ann Klein when they got into difficulty. And, you know, the questions were, you know, will this company survive, or do they have the management to do it, et cetera? And so I learned very quickly. And of course, you know, my clients always wanted an assessment, you know, in 2 weeks, complete assessment in 2 weeks, right? What's the answer? So, you know, you learn to work very quickly. So did a lot of that type of work. Then I had my own turnaround, restructuring, performance improvement firm called Quest that I was in 10 years. And during that, ran the largest direct mail hosiery company in the United States, and then also ended up being the interim CEO and selling a company called Wilkes Bashford, which was the merger of Goodman of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things you like to say is, what I like is I like saving businesses, you know, not performing the funeral. So that's the goal, is to save businesses that have a, you know, reason for being, and saving jobs and making sure that some of these great businesses do survive. So, you know, and along the way, in 2017, one of my former clients was looking to invest in a company called Route 21, which was a 750-unit specialty store that, served juniors and young men's, and advised the creditors. And when the company emerged from bankruptcy in 2017, was asked to become the chairman, and then became the CEO, and then the turnaround through 2020. And then in June of 2020, I was contacted by Monthly Capital, which is going to be the new owner, Ashley Stewart, to assess the company's operation. And then I joined the board, where I'm now chairman of the board. And 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, the founders of Gessler Henrich, Joel Gessler and Bill Henrich, whom I had known through the industry for many years, asked me to come on board to lead the retail practice there. And the company had just been acquired by Hilco, which is, you know, one of the powerhouses in the industry that touches pretty much every aspect of retail. And I've been there since, building a retail team and actively working with, you know, underperforming, stressed and distressed companies in retail and consumers.
Listeners who are tuning in to us, we were doing a fireside chat, and you spoke with my colleague Lauren Parker, who I think you guys mentioned a little bit about the holiday season, and let's go a little deeper on that. You know, Joe Attori, remember him from Ames Department Store? He was with the Retail Association, and he said, you know, I would ask him about Christmas. You know, how's it going to be? What's he thinking? He says, Arthur, Christmas comes every year. So what was so, and what's your assessment of the holiday shopping season? How much changed?
Okay. I think it's the holiday shopping season. If you look at gross sales, came in just about on the NRF target. Yeah. I think it's 0.8%, and it's usually between 3 and 4% pretty much every year, except, you know, during COVID, post COVID, where we had a big spike in demand, and that's now we're in a more normalized situation. I think what you're going to see, as we've been seeing for quite some time, is it's going to be a bifurcation in performance between the progressive, well-run retailers that really, you know, are engaging with the shoppers, and they're doing it right, and companies that are just hanging on. And so you're going to see performances, you know, comp store sales up 15%, comp store sales down 15%, profitability the same thing. So, and that's been going on for quite some time. Now, many years ago, you'd look at performance, and it was, you know, between retailers, and it was within a, you know, a very narrow band. But now that's not been the case. So, you know, and you see people, you know, you're going to see, I'm sure, people like Lululemon and Costco and Aritzia, and, you know, go on and on, that are going to, you know, continue to deliver outstanding results. And then you're going to see people that are struggling. And that'll be, you know, for public companies, you're going to see the numbers. For private companies, you're not. You're not going to know until some event happens in that regard.
So, and following this very heady holiday shopping season, the industry convened at Jacob Javits Center for NRF's big show. A ridiculous number of people showed up. It was over, I think, set a record, perhaps, you know, tens of thousands. And then you're walking the show floor, the expo area, and you have 7,000 vendors, you know, showing their wares. So just overall, what was your impressions of NRF this year?
Well, I think that there was a lot of energy. I think that the mood was positive. And, you know, and it's kind of like, it didn't have that sort of like doom and gloomish feeling about it. And people were looking to do business. People are, you know, retailers are opening stores, and you know, I think feeling better than they were maybe coming into holiday. So because I think people weren't sure what was going to happen, in that regard. But when you look at it, when you look at the economy, you know, employment's very strong. Inflation, the rate of inflation is down, right? Gas prices are down. So, you know, and consumers, despite the fact that they're continuing to add to their debt, right, are spending. But they are spending, you know, in a very targeted way, maybe much more targeted than they were in the past. And that's why you see this difference in performance in terms of you know, the companies that really resonate with them are getting the, you know, getting the business and gaining share. So, and then there's also the question, I think, that everybody's talking about, you know, what were the big things that people were talking about, right? Well, the number one thing that people was talking about was AI, right? And, you know, what the heck does AI mean? How will it affect our business? How can we use it? You know, and I think that was really the, you know, that's what everybody's talking about. And so many of the companies are now talking about how they utilize AI and machine learning in you know, in their business model. So, and the question is, you know, also, I think from a retail perspective is that what's right for us, right? What should the investment be? And with what companies that are utilizing it in terms of being able to affect business results? So that to me was the number one, you know, to me, the number one topic of discussion.
So speaking of technology, a lot of retailers, they have these, first they're reluctant to make investments in technology. They have these like Frankenstein tech stacks that are just, you know, ancient. You know, some people still using Excel in certain ways, and then you go to NRF and you see all these wonderful things, you know, just like amazing, you know, there's generative AI, there's, you know, predictive AI, there's you know, cloud-based solutions and platforms and e-commerce solutions that are just remarkable and makes omni-channel retailing a lot easier. So, you know, if I'm a CIO and I go there, I get all excited, and then I go back home and I go into the corner office and maybe I stop by the CFO and I say, we got to get this. We have to invest in this. And they're like, no, there's no money, right? So what is that? How do we make investments that make sense? You just kind of alluded that. Like, what makes sense?
You know, I can certainly relate it to that question from my tenure at Rue 21. And, you know, Rue had been, you know, for many years, really sort of, tech phobic. You know, they'd done things the way they'd always done it, and it'd been successful until it wasn't. Okay. And and that's what kind of happens, you know. The reason why companies get into trouble very often is they think that all they have to do is do what they're doing better and things will get better, as opposed to, yeah, of course you have to execute the basics, but you've got to start doing things differently. And you've got to judiciously invest in technology or you're going to be left behind because your competition's going to do it. And I think in terms of, for us, you know, at Rue, we were very out there in terms of investing in technology. And technology covers so many different areas. I mean, we were the second company in the United States in 2018 to do calling, you know, buy now, pay later. That was like, and because we knew that our customer had issues with credit, and this was a great way to extend credit to get them to buy more. We had an immediate impact on our revenues. And then, you know, and then being able to use predictive analytics in choosing the right product. You know, inventory is always a huge issue, okay, in terms of, you know, what's the right amount, where should you put it, and when do you mark it down, and how do you price it, et cetera. So, and, you know, inventory is an asset, right? So the faster you can turn it and deliver results, it's just going to go down to the bottom line. So if you could do that, that's great. So, and I think that with a lot of these technology solutions, first of all, for most of the companies you deal with, you can request a proof of concept, test it. Okay. Let's see if it delivers what you say it's going to deliver. And then, you know, you can build an ROI case for making the investment because, you know, if I spend this amount of money, okay, my ROI is going to be this. And so, I think you do it with a financial lens. Okay. You don't let some of these big companies sort of bulldoze you into huge technology investments that take forever. And then when they come on stream, okay, there's always a surprise. And you always have to remember that with technology, okay, it's like there's always going to be a gestation period, a transition period. So you got to build that into your projections, right? Say, you know, you're not going to flip a switch. You know, everybody wants to flip a switch and everything's going to be better. Well, it doesn't matter, especially with technology. And I can tell you, if you look at, you know, opening a new distribution center, a new e-commerce platform, There are always going to be hiccups. It's just the nature. And also, you've got technology and you've got people, right? And so, there's lots of things that can happen. But if you do your homework, all right, if you figure out, okay, what are the priorities of my business, right? What are the most businesses, all right? And especially in turnarounds, all right? There's probably only three or four big things that you need to focus on to really move the needle. And it's, I call it the 80% solution, okay? And also organizations don't have the capability of absorbing that much change all at once. So, you know, I have my little prescription, right? Once you understand the customer, which is number one, okay? And you get the right team of people in there, okay? Then you can execute your strategy, right? And you get, you know, results. But at the same time, overlaying all of this is you got to have enough liquidity because, you know, if you don't have, and this could be a healthy business that's investing or a turnaround stress business, it's like it always takes longer and more money than you think. So you have to build that into the equation too. Do you have the liquidity? And with retailers in particular, right, retailers cannot be levered, right? Because if you do lever, Arthur, you have seen this so many times. When you've got too much leverage on a business, you know, in retail, especially fashion retail, you have a bad season, okay? All of a sudden you have negative operating leverage, right? And if you don't have a strong enough balance sheet to withstand that, a perfectly good business can go bye-bye.
I think we're going to start to see that, right? Because during COVID, it was everybody's making these investments in digitalization and convergence technologies, and they took out a lot of the debt. And now that's coming to, you know, fruition. You got to like pay that off.
And if you're not doing well, okay. And what's happened? You know, it's so interesting though because it's always with retail. You know, you never know what's going to come out of left field, right? To change things. And if you look at e-commerce, right? There's some big issues in e-commerce, you know, with this change in iOS, you know, the cost of acquiring new customers has gone up dramatically. All right. And 3 years ago, that wasn't the case. You could predict it's going to cost you X dollars per consumer to get a new customer. And that goes into your model, et cetera. Then all of a sudden that got turned on its head and it became much more expensive to acquire new customers. And then the whole issue. And so with that too, you know, is the whole issue that we've been talking about at Guesslip since I got there before, you know, free delivery and free returns. Okay. And it's like, it's not tenable. Okay. And it's tenable for Amazon because they get $150 a year for you for the free shipping, which people forget. That it's not free, all right? So, and then of course they have the best logistics anywhere on the planet. But for most people, they don't have that. So you have to decide, you know, what financially makes sense for the company in terms of what should the free shipping threshold be, what should your policy be on returns, and you know, all of a sudden, companies are realizing that they gotta up the threshold for free shipping. They've got to charge for returns. They've got to start doing that because at the end of the day, they can't make money. And quite frankly, I think, you know, that's why we're in business, right? We're in business to make money, not to lose money. And so, right. And I think that customers understand that, especially, and it all starts, and we don't talk about this in the market. It all talks with the product, right? You got to have the right product. And if you don't have the right product, you know, what are you doing opening your doors? Okay. So if you have the right product that customers want and it's fairly priced, all right, there's a good price value relationship, customers will pay. The right product also is, I can go on about this forever, is it's got to fit. Okay. I've been involved in the plus size business for many years. And the number one issue for the plus size customer is fit. But if you have consistent fit, like, you know, like we have at Ashley Stewart, where, you know, we cater to the plus size gal, right? All right. Our return rates are so much lower than the industry average. Okay. And that all goes into profitability. So when you look at all these levers, there are all these levers, right, that you can push. You got to figure out which are the ones that are going to make the difference and make you successful and have you resonate with that customer.
But just to touch on what you said before, all those levers that you could control, you know, the end goal is performance improvement, right? You want to make sure that you're constantly reaching that goal of how do I perform?
Yeah, and that you're looking ahead. You know, I think part of the problem, you know, is retailers sometimes are looking in the rearview mirror too much, yeah, and they're not looking ahead, and they're not really saying, you know, what is the world going to be like? What's it going to be like for our customer? What is she or he going to require or want or need? And how do we fulfill that? How do we serve her, all right, in such a way that we're going to be their first stop in the shopping expedition? So, you know, it's the thing about, I always say this, it's not biotech, all right? But execution is difficult, and it requires a lot of discipline on the part of the retailer, because retailers have to be good at so many different things. Whereas, you know, if you're a brand and you don't have retail, you know, it's really all about the product and the marketing, et cetera. But it's not, they don't have to worry about real estate. They don't, you know, have to worry about as much about, they have to worry about supply chain. Supply chain is important for everybody. But, you know, real estate and motivating and training and retaining frontline associates, which is a huge topic that people do not address enough. Okay. You know, everyone's talking about, you know, theft and shrink, but they're not talking enough about how do we recruit, train, and retain frontline associates. And that has direct impact on shrink. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise, you know, because when you walk into a store, you know, when you walk into a store and there's no one on the floor, that's an invitation to, you know, take it and walk out. And then there's a whole other discussion. Father, we could talk about this forever, about the whole issue now about self-checkout. Okay. Yeah. Here's an example of a technological improvement, supposedly, that is starting to have retailers think, well, maybe that wasn't such a good idea after all. Right? Because when you're self-checking out, nobody's stopping you from putting some extra stuff in your shopping bag that you haven't paid for. So, you know, this whole, and also the issue, I think, which is really important, of human interaction, you know, and with everything, you know, people working remotely, with everybody on phones, et cetera, it's like, what should the shopper experience be? Well, certainly the human touch or the interaction is I think is more and more important in our environment. So, you know, so many things to think about and talk about, which makes retail great, right? It's kind of like you have to be like a juggler. You can't, you know what I mean? You got to have all those balls up in the air and believe that you can continue to, you know, to catch them and make them better. So,
Michael, thank you so much for spending time today. So I have my notes here. We're going to talk next time. We're going to talk about fit, and we're going to talk about maybe another episode on the frontline workers and their importance. So thank you again. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And please tune in again. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Arthur.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.